All right, Investor Plus is officially live, and it's everything you've been waiting for.
We're talking AI power networking to connect you with other investors who are serious about building their portfolio, not just dreaming about it.
You'll get access to Market Master Her, our step-by-step ebook that'll help you master any market, and an on-demand real estate fundamentals course that'll help you build your confidence. And nationwide chapter access, exclusive discounts worth over $6,000, and a 21-day meditation guide because, hey, balance is key. Imagine a big pile of cash. That is what most people think they need to have in order to invest in startups. But what if we told you that's not the case? Investing in startups is easier than you think.
In today's episode, we have Marcia Dawood. She has invested in over 50 companies, and she's going to break down for us what do you need to know to get started, not just to build your wealth, but also to make a positive impact.
Welcome to the Investor Podcast. I'm Liz Faircloth.
And I am your co-host, Andrea Segadelli. Many real estate investors might think that investing in startups are for the wealthy or more experienced investors. And during this podcast, I want to explore with you, Marcia, why real estate investors should also consider investing in startups, where they should start.
Yeah, that's a great question. I started when somebody invited me to an angel investing meeting in 2012. And I thought, oh, cool. Wait a minute. What's that? I have no idea what you're talking about. So I felt kind of intimidated by it. I thought, well, wait a minute. I kind of thought this was for rich people. I would see things on TV that people flying private planes and things like that. Like, I thought this is not for me. And, you know, I also invest in real estate as well. And I remember when I made my first investment feeling that way too. You know, like, was I invited into the room? You know, that kind of thing. And when I went to my first angel investing meeting, it was in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I thought, well, what's happening in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania? You know, like I thought all these things, you know, these were super cool companies, you know, these big tech companies, they all came out of Silicon Valley or even New York or Boston. So I had no idea. And I went to the first meeting and I saw entrepreneurs who were right in my backyard doing really cool, innovative things. And I thought, where have I been? Have I been living under a rock? I had no idea that these things existed and I could be a part of it. So this was all like a little mind-blowing to me. Like I had no idea that this could be something that I could participate in. And I was really just so interested in learning about this innovation that was going on. So I had been working in corporate America and I was kind of doing the same thing, expecting, you know, the different results kind of person. And when I started to see these innovations that people were working on, I thought, oh my gosh, I had no idea that some of these things could exist, do exist, or trying to exist. And a lot of that needs backing. It needs backing of people who are at that early stage, who kind of see the vision. They see the vision with the founders, and then they think to themselves, wow, I could be a part of that. And I really, this is something I really care about. And I want to do that. And so that's where my journey really began. And I quickly learned how little funding went to female founders. And I thought to myself, wait a minute, that can't be right. Because women, we're like 50% of the population. So you're telling me we only have like 2 to 3% of the good ideas? Like, I don't think so. So that has to change. And so I started to think, well, if I got involved and I talked to other people who got involved, then maybe we could start to kind of move this in the direction we want to see so that we can see the innovations that we want to see in the world.
I definitely want to talk about, you mentioned 3%, right? For funding for women. I want to break that down. But before we go there, I just want to clarify one thing. So when people think about investing in startups, they imagine like a pile of money, and that's what they need to invest, close their eyes, and then go with their day and pray that that's going to get a return. What are the different ways that one person can participate, collaborate, invest in startups?
Yeah. So what you just explained was probably what happened in like maybe the 80s and 90s. You know, you would just make an investment and it usually had to be a pretty large sum of money. We're talking like maybe tens or even hundreds of thousands of dollars. But that has changed so much, especially in the last 8 to 10 years. So a couple different ways. Let me break it down. One of them is through what's called equity crowdfunding. So people have heard of Kickstarter, Indiegogo, even GoFundMe. Those are donation and rewards-based crowdfunding sites. But the SEC changed the rules back in 2016. And now anyone who has, I kind of clarify it with, if you have an internet access and you have either a credit card or a bank account, you do need those things, you could invest for as little as $50 into a startup through a platform that is regulated. All that is regulated by the SEC, and you could participate. And this is a great way for not only investors to get involved at a very low dollar amount, but it's also a great way for companies, especially if they have a product or service that's, you know, direct to consumer, so that they can actually help market their product. So imagine if you became an investor, even if you invested only, let's say, $200 or something like that, into a company, but now you're an investor and they're using a product and you're like, oh, this is a pretty cool product. Well, I'm going to use the product too. And I'm going to tell all my friends about it. And so now, you know, the cycle's like, you know, really good for everybody. So there's that. And then there is also time. So people don't think about this as much, but startups, you know, it's really, really hard to build a company and scale it and all those kind of things. And so companies need advisors and they need people who are willing to roll up their sleeves, help them with certain things. And this doesn't mean you have to be a lawyer, an IP lawyer, or, you know, if maybe if it's a medical company that you have to be a doctor. I mean, we're talking all kinds of people with all kinds of different talents, all kinds of skills can help a startup company. So even if people really weren't interested in putting in money, which most angel investors are investing with money. But if they didn't want to do that, or if they wanted to do that and they wanted to also participate with time, that's something that in a lot of cases, if they become an advisor for a company, they would get some type of an equity stake in the company, very small, but still it would be possible. And the last thing I'll mention as far as how is you can invest in a for-profit company with philanthropic dollars. And some people are like, whoa, wait a minute, what does that mean? Well, through a donor advised fund, there are places that will allow you to self-direct where that money goes in the meantime. So right now, if you had a Fidelity, for just as an example, donor advised fund, you could say to them, well, I want you to put the money into a mutual fund or like, you know, certain stock, and it could grow while the money's sitting there before it actually goes to a charity. Well, with a self-directed donor advised fund or one that you have control over, you could actually say, well, I want that money to go to a for-profit company in the meantime. If the money does come back, you know, once there's a return, which we all hope for, and that money comes back into the donor advised fund, then you give it to your charity of choice. It can't go back into your bank account. But what I love about this so much is, remember, we were talking about how women don't get a lot of the funding. This is a way that you can actually help move that needle. And while you're using the philanthropic dollars, that particular founder, they have a good exit. They bring the money back into your donor advised fund. It's like a win-win-win. You got the tax write-off at the beginning. You get to help a for-profit founder who's underrepresented. And now that money comes back. Now you have like hopefully double, triple, even 10 times what you had before to give to a charity. So it's like such a great idea. And so I'm always talking about that to make sure that people know about it. But it's a little bit complicated. But, you know, once you get past a little bit of the logistics of it, it's really easy.
Marsha, I'd love to understand one of your first investments, one of your first angel investments. What was the company? You know, how much did you invest, if you can tell us that, the specifics? Because then, I think the listeners and even myself, I'll say, you start to get your head around, okay, I know how to passively invest maybe in a syndication, right? Or in a real estate deal. But this is new territory of just in a startup. And so we all have our opinion about startups. So I'd love to hear an example and then we can kind of talk through more specifics around the how and the why.
Yeah. So I love that you're talking about that, like as far as funds and things like that. So when I first learned, I kind of thought the only way I could invest is if I wrote like one check into one company. And I did do that at the very beginning until then I quickly found out that there were funds. And funds, even back in 2012, weren't nearly as accessible as they are today. So today I am an investor in many, many funds. I don't usually ever invest directly into one company anymore, basically because it's a little scary. You know, I tell a story. I wrote a book called Do Good While Doing Well, which is about helping people to demystify this whole thing, because I was so overwhelmed when I started as an angel investor, and I'm trying to help people not have that same feeling. So there was a story I tell where there's two guys and they both made three angel investments into directly into companies. So no funds were involved, right? The one guy had just amazing returns. Two of the three companies did super well. He got all kinds of money back. He was like, you know, loving it. And he was like, oh, angel investment, this is the greatest thing that ever happened, right? And then the other guy has the three companies out of that, all three of them go out of business like within a year. He's like, this is the worst thing I've ever seen in my entire life. I never want to deal with this again. So those are two extremes. I usually don't see either one happen very often because you really want to diversify your portfolio a lot more than that. So what happened with me is I made my very first investment, since that was the process of your question, at where I invested $20,000. And that was something I could not do often. Like, this was like a one-time thing that I did. And looking back, I wish there had been funds that I could have invested in at the time, but let's just put that all aside. Okay. So fast forward though, 8 years. Now it is 8 years that I had to hold the stock, but the company did have a successful exit. I got back, I talk about this in the book too, I got back $66,000 total. So that's a $46,000 return over 8 years. It's okay for an IRR, but you know, that detail. Don't let details get in the way of a good story, okay? So that $46,000 though, I did not have to pay any taxes on. And the reason why is because there is a provision in the tax code called 1202 that if you hold stock for a certain period of time, usually it's 5 years or more, and the company does well, the government will allow you to take that money tax-free. And the reason is that the government is really trying to encourage people like me, like us, like other people out there to put the money into the economy and help these small companies grow, because they know that there isn't enough funding from the government to be able to do it themselves. Now, the idea is that I would take that money and I would put it back into another startup, which is exactly what I did. So that whole cycle was really the epitome of what you'd want. Now, after that, I made one or two more investments, not with quite that much money, but they did not do nearly as well. And, you know, there's that. But overall, if you look at my overall portfolio, which, like I said, does have a lot of funds in it, I feel like the amount of write-offs that I've actually taken is probably less than 10% of what I've invested. So there are a lot of companies that are still doing quite well. And if you want to, we could go into this, but over the last like 3 years, it's been a very, very challenging fundraising environment, and there's been hardly any exits. So the liquidity isn't there. But I'm hoping and praying, we're all hoping and praying, that that will start to change.
So you're mentioning funds as an alternative to mitigate risk. What are the top three items that you look into a fund in order to vet that fund and say, okay, that fits my criteria and I feel comfortable investing on this fund versus that one?
So I think it really depends on what people care about and what the fund's thesis is. So every fund is going to have a thesis, and they're going to have basically a set of rules around what they will and they won't invest in. And that is what I think people really need to have aligned with their values.
So for you, what are yours? I'm curious to say, like, okay, we understand that, but how can we vet them? Like, I don't know people much. Do you vet more the fund, their experience, their background, how many people are on the fund, the amount of the fund? What are more specifics that you could give to the people listening?
Yeah, I think all of those things matter. The track record of the fund managers is probably the most important thing to look at and to see if they have invested in companies before that are like the ones that they say they're going to be invested in now. In some cases, they've already made a couple of investments in the fund or from the fund. So you can sometimes be able to take a look at what you're already investing in, which is also interesting. But you also want to see, is it an industry, or are they investing in things that really look like they could get a scalable return?
I have a ton of questions that are coming to my head simultaneously. So I'm gonna go off of this thought process of, you know, people invest to make a return, whether it's short-term, long-term. With startups, I have this thought process that it's all long-term. It's all like in, you know, 10 years plus. However, because if you're investing in a fund instead of a direct company, are there more quarterly distributions? Does it depend on the season of the company? If they're kind of, they've already done some fundraising and this is like stage two, they're not pure startups, like literally just getting going. I'm curious to understand a little more of that. So then people could say, okay, based on my goals, based on my even financial goals, short-term, long-term, it makes sense to go down this path because I'm going to get a return. I'm going to get a quarterly check, or I'm not going to get a quarterly check. How does that work when you're assessing funds and making decisions? Do I invest or not in a startup fund?
Right. So a traditional angel fund or venture capital fund basically works where there are no distributions, okay, or no quarterly distributions. There's only okay distributions when there's a liquidity event within one of the companies within the fund. So if people are counting on some type of a regular cadence of distributions, that is not the place to put money. There are revenue-based financing funds where they're making investments into startups, but they're specific to getting a revenue that would have a distribution. They aren't as common, but that is something that's out there.
I've attended a conference, a venture capitalist conference, and I understood a little bit more that over there were funds, but there were startups and the founders super passionate about their companies, their products, and their services. Some of them too passionate. What I mean by that is that their passion kind of got a lot, from my point of view, on the way for the growth of the company. And one thing that it got pointed out is that the advisory board, right? Who is part of the team? But what my question to you is, when investing not on a fund but on a company, how much weight do you put into the product slash service versus the founder? How much do you, like, if you really, really like the product and service, but you're not so excited about the founder, would you invest? Or like, do you have a scale, a metric on how to make the decision?
So due diligence is something that needs to be done on every company and every product and every team. There's a saying that you bet on the jockey and not the horse. So the team, I would say, if you asked, if you surveyed a bunch of angel investors or venture capitalists, a lot of them would say that the team is more important than the actual product. However, you do need a product that's scalable and is going to sell. And in a lot of cases, I see companies that they're trying to solve a problem. They think they have the solution, but in fact, the problem just isn't big enough to actually justify their solution.
Something happened there that was so funny. A person was talking about a solution, exactly what you're, a solution to a problem that she was mentioning, relevant. And then in the middle of her presentation, she shared, oh, and this can also, might be able to stop migraines. Everybody was like, forget about that other thing, because we are all talking about the migraine stuff here, that it's more appealing. And she's like, yeah, but I believe that the other matter, it's something that I'm really passionate about and I should go with that. So I my experience there is that sometimes the ego, or they're blind towards the feedback that people are given. And one thing that I was so impressed, it was with the capacity of the woman, their experience and what they were bringing to the table. But we also talked about how women startups don't get the funding. And you just mentioned this during this podcast as well. What are the reasons, in your opinion, that happens?
That women don't get funding? Or that people are unfocused?
Well, I think they're related, maybe. Maybe, who knows, right? But why do we have such a 3%, right? Small percentage of women getting the funding?
Well, a lot of cases, it's just because it's mostly men that are making the decisions about where the funding's going. So we're not going to change the amount of funding going to female founders, people of color, any underrepresented founder, until we get more people that look like them writing checks. And so that is something that from fund managers to individual investors to venture capital firms.
Well, that could be something that women that are listening could look into the funding and say, I want to know, send me a picture of your board of directors.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Right? To see, okay, oh, that makes sense. This is why you're investing in those companies are not on the other ones. Do you think that women are underestimated?
As far as founders, fund managers, absolutely 100%. And in a lot of cases, women are bringing in better returns. There are studies that have been done showing that they can take less funding and drive more revenue, have, you know, better EBITDA numbers. So these are things that I just think have not been talked about enough because there hasn't been enough data. If we can get more data about how well women are returning money, then things will change.
Right. And there's so much research that shows, right, the more wealth that women have, the more money that they have, communities are impacted, right? Everything along those lines. I'm curious to ask you about industries, because you're someone who invests in angel investing, you invest in companies. What industries, if I'm listening to this, I'm like, you know what, I'm intrigued. What industries should they stay away from? Potentially, and I know it's a loaded question, but I'm curious to get in your head of what industries we may want to stay away from and industries to take a look at, especially, where we are in the economy. I'm curious to get your thoughts around what's hot, what's not.
Yeah, well, typically the three industries that startups and investable startups are in is either healthcare, tech, or consumer products. Tech obviously has seen a lot of explosive growth and made people, especially in Silicon Valley, a lot of money. Right now, and most recently, AI is the hottest thing around. AI can be a little bit scary because there is so much happening in that space so fast. And like we talked about, sometimes startups take a long time to develop and to get off the ground and to scale. So we've talked a lot at the Angel Capital Association about how do we, and I've talked a lot with other investors, how do we really analyze an AI company? Because we don't know if like 10 minutes from now, it could be totally different, right? So many things are changing and so many things are happening. So what we've really found is that you need to analyze, again, back to Andreessa's point, you need to analyze the actual product and what they're doing and the problem that they're solving. And if AI is a component of that, great. Understand how the AI is working in that, but also understand, is this something that is a real need?
One thing that I had from my perspective as an investor, what I found very challenging is the products. Once I understood fully what they're trying to propose, I thought, this is great. But that's not the first impression that I got when I read your paper, your proposal, and during your presentation. I did not get that. Now we are having a conversation. Now I get that. Do you feel challenging to some startups? I want to hear your impression on that. What I felt is there was a disconnection. The product is really amazing, but how they are communicating it, there was a big gap because don't have 30 minutes to have a conversation one-on-one, right? You got to explain that in a few minutes to somebody to grab their attention and then go forward. And I felt that there was a big disconnect that, and I don't know if that it's a common thing that happened because it was my first time on that type of conference.
You are so spot on. You are so spot on. So yes, it is a huge problem that founders have a hard time articulating their value, their solution, whatever it is that they're doing. And to your point, yes, they have to explain it in literally like, I mean, I'm talking 30 to 60 seconds or you're losing our attention. So I talk to entrepreneurs all the time about explain to me what the problem is and explain it to me like I am 5 years old. I mean, literally, it has to be so simple. And don't like try to throw terms at me that I don't know. Or like, I mean, I love life science companies. I'm not a scientist, though. I don't know what you're talking about, right? You need to make it so simple for me. So I always say to them, look, if you can explain what the problem is that you're solving in less than 30 seconds and really make it compelling, then you're going to get their attention and that will take you through the rest of your presentation.
I love that. Yes. Yes to all of it. I'll be super happy about that.
And then I can use my son. I want to start doing this with my son because he's a fifth grader. So
perfect.
Are you saying a five-year-old or a fifth grader?
Both.
Okay.
everybody in between.
They need to understand.
Exactly. I'm going to start explaining things to you like that too, Andres, and vice versa, right? I think Marcia, that's so important because, you know, everyone listening is either looking for funds for their own real estate projects or their entrepreneurs looking for funds for their businesses, right? It's interchangeable. And how many times Andres and I are talking to a group of women and they're so enamored with, should I buy a short-term rental or should I buy a, you know, long-term rental versus what are the housing problems? What are the housing challenges in the community? What problems are you solving? Because ultimately, as an investor, as an entrepreneur, if you're not doing that, and I literally just recorded a video, I spoke at my son's career day about solving problems. So I love what you're saying for those listening that, hey, I want to maybe invest in a startup. And then on the flip side, I'm looking for funding because there's a lot of women who are growing their portfolios by using other people's money, right? They're putting syndications together. They're raising the funds both on debt and equity side. So I love what you're saying. For someone who is very, let's be honest, a lot of these startup founders are, you know, if they're tech, they tend to be pretty smart. They probably are a little more introverted, right? I would imagine as well.
Love them. We get along very well.
You know, regardless of where you are on the continuum, we're all selling our ideas and looking to solve problems and raise money for something. How do we then do that? How do we explain the problem so that someone, you know, that a, you know, five-year-old or fifth grader can understand it? What is the process of, I'm listening to this and like, I agree with that. I want to hear it that way. I want to give it that way. What are some things that I can do as a result of listening to this that they can really start to obviously use ChatGPT, but beyond that, the thinking that goes into how to simplify, because we all use too much jargon in everything that we do and it loses people.
Yeah. So for the hundreds of entrepreneurs that I've talked to and helped with their pitches and things like that, it boils down to one question. And that is, why did you start the company? And if you can get them to explain in very simple language why they started the company, that's usually the problem they're solving. So for example, I really like to back companies that are working on neurodegenerative problems because my mother passed away from ALS. So if I was talking to another founder who said, I had a family member who passed away from ALS, and this is why I'm working on this treatment that can actually help this particular disease, I'm like, I now see the problem and I now see what you're doing. Super easy, super simple. You know, that type of simplicity is, I think, what people really are looking for, because you want to be able to sit there and you have no idea when you're pitching, you have no idea who as a founder is sitting in the audience. And it could be a whole room of super smart people, and it likely is. But I could be smart, but I don't know anything about, you know, whatever XYZ technology that you're working on. So you have to assume that I have to have it in the most digestible type of format so that then I can be like, okay, I get it.
Yeah. And it's so important, quite honestly, for everyone when they're communicating and enrolling people in not just their products and their services and their business, but in ideas, right? So I think that's good advice on so many different levels.
Before we wrap it up, for the women that are like, okay, I got it. I want to know, what platforms could you recommend for them to go ahead and start exploring these possibilities?
So I always tell people that there's a couple things. Like one, just look around at what's happening in your own backyard. Like literally do an online search and you could put in startups or entrepreneurs in and then like fill in your city or town. And just find out what's happening in your local community, because you would be surprised how much is going on. And I have found over and over and over again, maybe not so much in Silicon Valley, that's a little bit of a different animal over there, but in most towns and cities, you will find that the entrepreneurs kind of all flock together, the investors, you know, end up all being in the same kind of general location. They're usually going to the same kind of events. And that's where you can really learn about what's happening and be supportive of your local community. Because I talk to so many people and they say, well, look, I think it's great to help entrepreneurs, but what about the people that are like right here? I could be helping them, you know?
And not only in your local area, but with a mission or something that they're solving that you feel passionate about, right? There's a
Absolutely.
Connection. So yeah. It kind of kills multiple stones. Marcia, where can everyone listening learn more about you and follow you on your journey?
So they can go to my website. It's simply my name, marciadawood.com. I do have a podcast called The Angel Next Door because my mission really, I ran out of money personally. like I said, you know, you can't really make that many investments unless you're like super uber wealthy. So I started to get to a point where I was like, hey, how come other people aren't doing this more? And I would talk to people and they would say, well, I don't get it. I don't understand. It's not that they didn't want to do it. They just had no idea it was accessible to them. So I started the podcast. I wrote a book called Do Good While Doing Well. There's also a workbook that goes with it that can help people to just learn more about it and demystify it.
Love it. Thank you so much, Marcia, for your time here with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this podcast and want to receive updates on our next interviews, go to our website, therealestateinvestor.com. There, you can subscribe to our show, become part of our investor community, and get updates on upcoming episodes.
If you like our show, please share with other women who would benefit. And don't forget to leave us a rating on iTunes. We'd really appreciate it. And as always, we encourage you to take one action as a result of today's show and put it into motion so you can live both a financially free and balanced life. Thanks for spending time with us.
Ciao.